Welcome to the Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Network, proudly celebrating 16 years. Here's your host, Luke McCormack.
Good afternoon and welcome to this month's show. I'm Luke McCormack. During today's show, we will discuss progress being made in cloud computing programs within the Department of Defense and Homeland Security agencies. With me on today's show are Paul Puckett, Director, Enterprise Cloud Management Agency, U.S. Army; John Hale, Chief of Product Implementation for the Hosting and Compute Center, Defense Information Systems Agency; Richard Clark, Chief Technology Officer, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement; Matthew Chiodi, Chief Security Officer, Public Cloud, Palo Alto Networks; Stephen Moon, Principal Data Platform Architect, Office of the Field CTO at Snowflake; and Aaron Kinworthy, Area VP, Federal ServiceNow. Well, we're talking about a very important subject, a very active subject. Paul, we're going to start with you. I understand you all got promoted from an office recently to an agency. A lot going on over there. Give us the state of the state.
Yeah, absolutely, Luke, and thanks for having me on. So as part of the Enterprise Cloud Management Agency, as most of you know here, but for others that are relatively new, we're responsible for both creating the strategy as well as the implementation and delivery of the Army's new modern approach to adopting cloud computing. We've had a number of different swings at that in the past, but really we weren't leaning in and changing the way that we organize ourselves, nor were we looking at the way that we do business. So over the course of the last 2 years, the ECMO, as it was first founded, the Cloud Management Office, essentially leaned in and started delivering not only a strategy, but also services to accelerate the Army's adoption of cloud. And with us adopting, delivering services and what that meant for the Army, we were once part of the Chief Information Office officially as part of one of their directorates, mm-hmm. but we had to switch into a field operating agency because we started to step out of the role of just policy and governance that's typically appended to the CIO and started delivering services and capability. And so by becoming a field operating agency that reports to the CIO, now we've got the full spectrum of essentially authorities when it comes to not only ideating around what should be done across the Army when it comes to cloud, but also executing and delivering services. When we first leaned in, we partnered with the Office of Business Transformation. They had a major move to start to modernize the ERPs that run a lot of the logistics in business for how we do the Army. And so we had a major press to move those capabilities into the cloud. And that was kind of the first mover. From then, we've seen capabilities across every single ACOM, and nearly every single downtrace across the ASCCs and the DRUs start to identify critical systems that they believe could benefit from moving to the cloud and start to accelerate capabilities in the cloud. It's really started this journey of a new realization of how we could be doing business. I just recently got back from 9 days of travel, and essentially I was running across the entire Pacific from Washington State to Hawaii, all the way out to Guam. And the entire narrative was, how can we start to deliver mission command capabilities as a service? Typically in the Army, we think about delivering capabilities as a massive fielding challenge. And so oftentimes when everyone gets their own kit, that becomes sometimes a multi-year initiative. But now with the delivery of online on-demand compute and storage resources, we can now fundamentally reimagine the way that we deliver capabilities all the way to the tactical warfighter. And we believe that there's immense value in leaning in and delivering mission command as a service, and now having a persistent online ecosystem that allows for the ad hoc nature of exercises and experimentation across the Army, but to be able to dramatically reduce the fielding time from years all the way down to minutes, and then also the operational lead time from months all the way down to simply, I think our latest goal here is around 30 minutes there. So it just fundamentally changes the way we think that we can do business, and then also now how we organize ourselves to deliver those types of capabilities. So definitely a lot going on. In 22, our goal is to really scale the value of cloud computing across the Army. And so we're starting to see those ideas start to pop up and change of, wait, what could I be doing differently? And not only the way we organize, but then also the way that we design these systems to now work as a distributed ecosystem, rather than these isolated fixed resources that we're typically accustomed to in the past. And, so we're really excited for where 22 is going to go, especially in the context of scale, but also then just the different way that we can possibly do business to dramatically lower the cost of doing business, but also increase the capabilities and value that we can have to the warfighter.
Right. And time to market, so to speak, that consumption model, it seems like configuring yourself as an agency came just in time. John, how about Adisa? You all deal with all the services. You've got quite a portfolio there. Give us an update on sort of what's happening in the cloud computing
spectrum across
DoD.
Yeah, so as you did your introduction, it was kind of interesting. So hearing my title is a little different now than what it has been in the past. So one of the things we did at DISA was over the last year, we've actually combined the Cloud Computing Program Office out of the DoD CIO, the Cloud Services Organization within DISA, and our traditional ecosystem, our data centers, into one organization, which is now the Hosting and Compute Center. And the idea there is to take the prospect of hosting it one step further. You know, the answer isn't traditional compute. The answer isn't cloud. The answer isn't any one thing. It's traditionally been a hybrid within the department of crossing those boundaries between cloud and traditional compute. So what we've done is we've taken all those assets and put them into one organization now under one leader who can now guide that as far as the DISA goes. So we have the ability to really focus on the hybrid side of compute, which is where we see a lot of the compute within the department going, specifically at the tactical edge. There's a big focus right now on the tactical edge. You know, Paul just said he was out at Guam. Indo-PACOM, from a COCOM perspective, has put in formal requests to get both edge compute and cloud capabilities deployed into their theater. We've gotten the same request from AFRICOM. And so the big push now is how do we answer the compute needs and the cloud capability needs to the tactical edge and to the warfighter. So that's where a lot of our focus is right now, and that's really what we're kind of zeroing in on this year.
Yeah, good acknowledgement about cloud, sort of the definition of cloud. It's not sort of just a thing out there. It's really a definition of a model, a consumption model, of which there's a lot of different technologies that have been introduced now to allow you to do these hybrid capabilities and get that capability to the folks on the ground. Richard, how about over at Immigration and Customs Enforcement? You all shot out of the box like a rocket and very aggressively moved some very sensitive things, I might add, into the cloud environment. Give us an update as to where you all are at this point.
Thanks for having me, Luke. As you mentioned, not everybody knows, we were the recipients of getting squeezed out of the DHS data center. So we took advantage of our SecDevOps practice that we had going on, and we went full in on the cloud with all of our enterprise ops a number of years ago. So because we had a very abbreviated timeline in order to get into the cloud, we predominantly had to do a lift and shift. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about our cloud programs today, it is really about taking advantage of additional services and the cloud native services to take away those single points of failure that we may have brought to the cloud with us because of the rapid timeline in which we got there. You know, there's also continuously new features that the cloud service providers are offering in the government regions that we want to take advantage of in order to reduce cost or improve resiliency of the implementation. We're also at the point now where we're taking a lot of our colo points of presence and even our field office location information and also moving that into the cloud, which was not part of the enterprise shift that we completed a number of years ago. So, you know, continuous improvement on our SecDevOps practice, which really helps us get into the cloud faster, and continuous pursuit of excellence for these individual programs to make certain that they're taking advantage of all the capabilities that the cloud can offer is really where we're looking at growing and extending our cloud ecosystem at ICE.
Yeah, real good catch there with sort of post lift and shift and now unlocking all this capability that's available in these new technologies that are being offered. Matt, how about at Palo Alto Networks? There's no way any agency, any service element that DoD can do this without great partnerships from folks like Palo Alto enabling and unlocking these capabilities.
Absolutely, Luke. Yeah, we're seeing across all of our federal customers just a real demand and a desire to better secure those operations as they move into the cloud, whether they're purely 100% cloud or whether they're hybrid, as some have mentioned here. You know, obviously in the wake of what happened with SolarWinds and the Kaseya breaches, I think specific to cloud, there is a great desire to move toward things like zero trust, right? We obviously know there was the presidential directive that came out, also some things with NIST. And so I think, although, you know, perhaps in previous years, there was a lot of talk around zero trust, the Kaseya and SolarWinds breaches really made that a reality. And we're starting to see customers get very serious about that in the federal space, specifically when it comes to cloud, because I think, as Rich just mentioned, you know, the first wave of migrations to the cloud really were primarily categorized around lift and shift. But as applications become more modern and they become more cloud native, there is a real need, based upon even some of the threat research that we've done, to make sure that those cloud native supply chains are secure.
Yeah, you know, there's no question about it that as we move into these environments, and again, undoubtedly, it's not just a pure lift and shift. There's always this blend, this hybrid environment, you know, that sort of risk service, that attack surface gets a lot more complicated. So undoubtedly, those things are being accounted for as those decisions are being made. Steve, how about it, Snowflake? You're just assuming at some point that all of this is kind of coming together. And now all of a sudden you want to take advantage of all this wealth and dearth of data that's available and enter Snowflake.
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things I'm seeing, though, just in general, is the advent of a lot of companies building on the cloud, right? You kind of had the first iteration of, you know, cloud service providers. Now you're seeing a lot of companies build on the cloud, right? So, you know, Snowflake's one of those companies, native, you know, born in the cloud. You know, cloud agnostic and all that stuff. But, you know, we're a data platform company, a data cloud company. And so one of the interesting things we're seeing a lot of traction in is actually in data security. Not, there's obviously security of the data, but there's also data security data itself, right? So I'm collecting data from the edge, I'm collecting IoT data logs, all these things. And how do I share that in a secure way? How do I allow other agencies to access that data in a secure way while maintaining ownership of that data? And so you hear terms around like data mesh and all these things, but really, really what a lot of agencies are really asking for is how do we share that data, maintain ownership of that data, but provide value, allow others to derive value out of that data. And so that's probably one of the most conversations I'm having, honestly, within the last several months, is around, you know, we're talking about next gen SIEMs, you know, user behavior analytics and things like that, that, you know, it's great that you're collecting that within your own agency or within your own department, but the real value is being able to see trends across. And that's one of the things the cloud enables, but it also, you know, having a singular point for all of that data to be converged in a way that you can still manage it within your own agency, but you're also able to share that data in a way that's secure. And so that's one of the biggest trend I'm seeing in the government. And that kind of hits on, you know, some of the stuff that happens to SolarWinds, and, you know, agencies are realizing they're going to have to take a different approach to that. And so, you know, with Snowflake obviously being a data platform, it kind of lends itself very well to be able to do all that, because it handles all those different types of data coming in, allows a single security model and all those things. But that actually dovetails back into my original statement about companies building on the cloud, you know, and the government's you know, willingness to use more SaaS type, you know, move from, you know, infrastructure as a service, the platform, into the SaaS model. And really what that allows the government to do is to add value, right? They don't necessarily have to do all this stuff behind the scenes, that, you know, they can add value to their domain expertise, you know, whether that's, you know, immigration and customs enforcement, security or whatnot. And so those are probably the two biggest things I'm seeing that are starting to accelerate within the federal government.
No doubt, every agent, every soldier, every officer deserves more capability that one is secure and they can rely on and depend on the integrity. Zero trust architecture being a big part of that. Well, thinking and talking about SaaS, Aaron, how about over at ServiceNow? You all, once again, not completely a cloud play, right? You can do on prem, as I understand, but certainly taking advantage of that sort of up the value chain capability.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Luke. You know, ServiceNow's had hyper growth in the federal space, and it's been really exciting to see the evolution that's happened over the last 10, you know, 15 years. What ServiceNow is doing from a progressive standpoint is really listening to the next generation. People are accustomed to a certain level of service and automation in their regular lives. And as a government agencies evolve, we have to respond to that. And there's still a gap that needs to be closed. And as our famous CEO, Bill McDermott, will say, nobody has to lose for ServiceNow to win. And that's really attributed to the architecture being in the cloud and that we can play nicely with others, but the scalability that can be done across the globe, the rollout that's able to be done and the mobility that can be used is really answering to that next generation that we've been listening to. And it boils down to really three simple things. Paul, you mentioned mission as a service at the Army. We're excited to be supporting that and IT moving into more of an OT role, data becoming something that's a currency that's of value, right? Both our adversaries and ourselves are using data to better our missions. The next is everything is becoming a service, right? And so we as government agencies or as enterprise vendors need to be aware of the service that we're providing people. And you lose and gain constituents based on the quality of your service. And that's extremely important as we evolve into this next century. And the last and the most important, and our CEO says this as well, it's all about the people. Everything we do, regardless of our mission, has truly started to evolve around the people, whether it's the well-being of our soldiers or the well-being of our soldiers' families or the government employees that we have or the people that we're serving. It really comes down to the person's experience. And so cloud computing has, as you said, put rocket fuel on this and really accelerated the scalability, the mobility that can be done. And it's very exciting to be a part of it.
Fantastic. John, we want to talk about you came over the top with a lot of different activities going on over there. Give us, if you will, a specific example of a program that you'd like to highlight where the cloud computing has really enabled some capability.
So one of the big things we're working on right now is what we call infrastructure as a code. Infrastructure as a code is a program which we took kind of what the cloud service providers were providing as native capabilities, and we turned it into something that the DoD can leverage. The old adage is you push button, you get banana, right? And so the goal behind infrastructure as a code is to do that from a cloud perspective. So what we've done is we've come up with these basically a set of automated templates and automated capabilities that a mission partner can go into the cloud and actually push a button and basically get an environment that meets DoD standards that directly inherits in the EMAS perspective all of the security controls which the DoD expects. And it's basically, we don't like to use the term, but it's basically stigged in a box, right? And mm-hmm. So you get a set of servers that are pre-configured and meet all of the DoD security controls necessary. And you actually get to inherit your security controls from our packages that exist within the security system. So to go from, push button to live system, certified and accredited is a much shorter time frame now. And that's really where we're trying to get at is, the push button, get banana concept. So infrastructure as a code is a huge game changer that we see coming forward for our mission partners to be able to build those cloud native applications as we move away from lift and shift.
No doubt, especially when you talk about the DevSecOps and time to market, push button, definitely the way to go. Maybe we'll even see if Richard can talk about ATO in a day. We'll see. All right, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network.
DISA and DHS recently released best practice guides on hot topics such as zero trust, cloud security, and container hardening to help protect federal agencies from supply chain cyber attacks. Join us as Palo Alto Networks Chief Security Officer of Cloud, Matt Chiodi, talks to federal leaders about exciting new best practices for implementing zero trust principles in the cloud.
For many government agencies, the question isn't whether to move to the cloud. It's about which services can deploy more efficiently and securely via the cloud to provide the agency with additional capabilities to better serve citizens and employees, often with less internal cost and resources. At ServiceNow, we pledge to improve efficiency and engagement with a single cloud platform. ServiceNow, we make the world of work work better for people.
Snowflake is the FedRAMP-approved data cloud. Federal agencies require agility and the ability to securely share data within and among organizations and across multiple clouds. With Snowflake, agencies can focus on putting data to use with unlimited scale and speed on the centralized data platform that satisfies the strictest compliance and security requirements. Start your journey toward data-driven decision-making at snowflake.com/government. That's snowflake.com/government.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network. We're talking about cloud computing at the defense environment and at DHS. I'm going to throw it over to Matt. We're talking about specific programs that we'd like to highlight. Matt, I'm sure you have a wealth of those. Give us one that you'd like to highlight that has really, you've seen sort of enable some fantastic capability.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about it because of the sensitivity of it. Obviously, talk about it a little bit generically. We'll say this is within,
of course,
within the DoD. It's about as specific as we'll get. You know, we've worked with this specific agency for a number of years now. And what they've done is they've taken a very cloud-native approach to how they're developing their applications. And what they've done is they've really standardized around Docker, so with containers and Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. And what they've found is that by taking this very modular approach, as I think it was John who mentioned before, you know, heavy use of infrastructure as code, heavy use of containers, they have very much made it so that getting the authorizations and meeting the federal standards, those are push button. I love the way John said it, push button, get banana. That is an amazing, simple way to think about it. But we've worked with this agency for a time now, and they have been able to move so much quicker. And, you know, we've mentioned, I think, Docker and Kubernetes before, really just how they are pivotal and a key part of cloud native architectures. But, you know, an interesting point here is, you know, one of the teams that I lead at Palo Alto Networks is our Unit 42 cloud threat intelligence team. And they recently published a piece of research where they studied literally hundreds of thousands of third-party containers. And what they found is that 96% of those containers deployed in the cloud infrastructure contain known vulnerabilities, 96%. Wow. So although, you know, containers as a technology, Kubernetes, they are amazing and they allow organizations, they let federal agencies be extremely agile and quick. One thing that organizations have to make sure that they embed is the whole concept of shift left security, where if you have developers that are creating new cloud native applications for you, that you make sure that you are enabling those developers to be able to create those applications securely. A lot of times, Luke, the security focus doesn't come until the application is already built and it's getting ready to be released into production. Mm-hmm. If you wait to that point in time, you've really given up a lot of the capabilities, again, that John and Paul were talking about, where you, because cloud native applications, they're declarative. That means I can look at the code and I can know exactly what they're going to do before they're even launched. You have an ability to inspect those from a security perspective and find those vulnerabilities and misconfigurations. So we've worked really closely with a number of agencies around doing just that, but we're still fairly early in this game.
Frightening statistic there, and something that we certainly want to keep an eye on. Paul, you top-lined a lot of capability for, quite frankly, a very young agency. Give us an example of a specific program that you'd like to highlight for the listening audience.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'll give you two.
Sure.
So one, yes, a small agency, pretty young. We've only succeeded with partnerships across the Army. That was kind of the key thing coming in, is like the only way we're going to be able to do this is to be able to find other people that want to do something a little bit different and have an impact. One of those early partners was Army Futures Command, the software factory that stood up was an initiative around how do we get soldiers. We talked about people being our most important asset, but how do we get soldiers who understand how the cloud works, what the value of software and data is, and start to have them start to control a little bit of their future and solve problems for soldiers by soldiers. And so a major partnership there, where the software factory is now in their second cohort of training soldiers. So they've got already five product teams that set up from the first cohort, and we've got five more product teams coming online here shortly. And we partnered in the creation utilization of what we call the create environment, but it's essentially, it's the Army's first enterprise DevSecOps ecosystem that facilitates how people are going to be designing and building and then fielding and then continuously enhancing the value of software in the hands of soldiers in incorporating DevSecOps practices and principles across our development teams, our security cyber professionals, as well as our platform operations teams. And so I want to highlight them, great partner, just simply demonstrating just a new way of doing business, but more importantly, just how important it is for us to understand how software and systems shape and change the way that we can do business. I just want to pause and just highlight, I'm super thankful for, you know, Palo Alto on here, for Snowflake on here, as well as ServiceNow, because together you have this focus on security, data, and workflows. And when you talk about combining those three together, they can be absolutely transformational. The other one I want to highlight is an initiative born out of 18th Airborne Corps, what many may know as Project Bridgeway. But a similar kind of effort where Forces Command wanting to lean in and truly become practitioners of data and services for the way that they solve problems. And that was all born out of a message to me on CVR at the time from a young captain that said, hey, I don't know if the Army is okay with me messaging you directly, but I want to deliver tactical cloud as a service to the Army. And that blew up into just amazing transformational change where just recently they ran their Scarlet Dragon ecosystem as part of an online exercise entirely enabled by a cloud capability. Just fundamentally changed the way that we look at opportunity and changed the way that we do business. So there's two for you, Luke, of some initiatives I'm really proud of.
Amazing. It sounds like the Delta Force of DevSecOps. It's pretty incredible and very impressive. Aaron, how about at ServiceNow? I know you have a ton of use cases out there that you all have been involved in, all this activity that's been going on with COVID, et cetera. Give us an example of one that you'd like to highlight for us.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Luke. And, you know, we mentioned people being really the center of where service is driving in cloud computing going forward. So one of our favorite examples, and I'd love to mention today, is what's called ARMA, which is the Army Housing application that was built on ServiceNow. You know, this is an issue that back in 2019 made it all the way to the floor of Congress, right? Issues with enlisted housing on base and just the conditions and the ability to, or lack of ability to report, and the frustration. If you think about it, the well-being of our soldiers extends to our families as well. And so this was a major issue. Very honored to know that ServiceNow was chosen to build an application, not only to be deployed globally, which 10 years ago was not capable of doing it in a short order, but we also deployed it in less than 3 months. So now you have soldiers and their families able to use their mobile devices to take pictures of issues, report the claim, the claims actually get followed up on. The metrics have been incredible. Thousands of hours have saved, morale has improved. And you know, we're just extremely proud to know that we have changed the lives of the servicemen and women that are protecting our country. And it seems small to solve something like that, but it's got such big impact to each individual that it's really been something that, you know, we couldn't be more proud to partner with the Army on, and it's been a big success.
No question. I mean, just these, I don't want to even call it simple because it's much more comprehensive of that, you know, enabling, you know, some capability in whether it's the service member themselves, their families, daily lives is a big deal, right? I really do appreciate that. Richard, how about at Immigration and Customs Enforcement? You top lined a whole bunch of things there. Give us an example of one thing, one program that you'd like to highlight for us.
Well, you know, Luke, we have an investigatory data analytics program that is doing a ton of stuff that I don't think we ever would have come close to being able to do if it was not for our movement into the cloud. Mm. You know, CIO caught wind of an operational unit that was planning on taking a bunch of dilapidated old servers from a closet somewhere and standing up a little skunk's work project down in a field office. And
sounds very scary.
We caught wind of this and, you know, we're able to partner, and they were one of our early significant presences in the cloud. And it was really that partnership and the work together that we were able to break through on truly a large number of very sensitive data access requirements by centralizing it, by moving it together, you know, as Stephen, as John talked about earlier, I believe, Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was Stephen. With, you know, centralizing the data, making it more available was a capability that was lost in a lot of ways. I think this, you know, was huge for us, and it really expanded our ability to stretch the limits of what we could do, and provided much greater analysis for our users.
Yeah, taking advantage of that capability, that technology that's available, ensuring the security of it, and then enabling and unlocking that capability to your operators. That sounds like a win-win-win. Stephen, how about at Snowflake? Lots of examples there. Give us one that you'd like to highlight.
Yeah, probably the most glaring, and this is kind of across federal, it really touches everybody, was a lot of the stuff we did with COVID-19 data. You know, very early on, I mean, you think about there was a lot of collection going on, but not much interaction because things are happening, you know, real time. And so we were able to set up, you know, through data exchange and data marketplace concept, you know, being able to allow researchers, scientists, you know, pretty much anybody who had to share that data, expose that data, so they could do, you know, research, reporting, analytics against that in real time as it was being collected in some cases. And so that was kind of a game changer. Like, you didn't have to, like, you know, FTP it somewhere. You didn't have to send an email with a spreadsheet and all that stuff. You know, they were just collecting it where they were, and then allowing that data to be accessed. And so as a result of that, we've seen a lot of interest in that capability in the federal healthcare space. You know, and frankly, a lot of that kind of bleeds over, and you think about, you know, interaction with the states. And, you know, if you think about, like, I'd use the example, like Medicaid services, for example, you know, every state kind of has their own way of doing it, right? There's not one way of doing it. And then you have CMS and the NHS, and, you know, how do you, you're not gonna go into each state and necessarily tell them how to do it, right? Necessarily, but what you do need is the data. And so that data sharing capability, I come back to that theme because that's really what the cloud enables, in a way that, you know, you don't have to do data movement, right? I can still do it in a secure way, but now I can deliver things to the consumer faster, right? And these cases, the consumer is the citizen. But you could think about some of those transposing into things like working with the VA, right? You know, delivering, you know, things for veterans. We're coming up on Veterans Day, and, you know, veterans healthcare, for example, is a way that, you know, some of these capabilities can be transposed over into doing those things in rapid succession. But a lot of that was really, you know, a lot of lessons learned from how people were using that as part of, like, the COVID-19 response to be able to share that data. And so even with the Army, for example, you know, really any DOD, you know, when you're working with, like, federally funded research centers, or, you know, university, federally funded research or university affiliated research, things like that, it's really a force multiplier in a way to accelerate, you know, deriving the value out of that data.
Being able to share it, ensuring that there is an architecture, AKA zero trust, so that you can maintain the integrity of it, extremely powerful. Well, I want to talk about top priorities. Paul, let's start with you. No question that you've got some things on the deck. You touched on 2022. What are those priorities looking like for this year and the coming year?
So, like John talked about, our ability to expand the availability of online on-demand computing resources globally is really important. Understanding data sovereignty laws and some of the constraints that and also the law of physics kind of does to us when it comes to access to cloud computing is really important. So understanding our on-premise architecture in context of, you know, an off-premise, you know, public resource is really important. So I see a lot of 22 focusing on truly what that hybrid architecture looks like and needs to look like for the DoD. And I think he understates it, just the value of DISA reorganizing themselves around the CCPO, the cloud initiative, as well as the on-premise initiative, that all of these resources need to be seen as kind of a pool of resources when we're starting to dive into the definition there. So I think there's going to be a lot of that investment, a lot of that collaboration. I also think in the flavor of zero trust, there's going to be a lot of work across the DoD when we start talking about identities and personas. Not just of people, which I think is the easy one that most people can wrap their heads around, but also the identities of our services, the applications, our data sets, not just the devices and the users that we're so accustomed to. Because I really don't think that any conversation around zero trust should be happening unless you're also talking about the data itself. Far too often, I see zero trust focusing on, you know, people and devices and not caring about non-person entities and data. And I think that that's a foul. So I think there's going to be a lot of work around that. And I also think there's going to be a lot of work around, now, how do we extend kind of this software-defined ecosystem from a zero trust perspective, then globally on top of those cloud computing resources? That's where I kind of think the whole entire DoD is going to be focused in. For the Army specifically, we're trying to scale the value of cloud computing to the total Army. How might we, it's kind of the key question in the sense of delivering capabilities in a different way, leveraging cloud to its greatest extent. And we've put a number of enterprise contracts in place, and we've got a few more coming this year that'll really, from an acquisition perspective, put key tools into the hands of everyone across the United States Army, and dare I say across the DoD, when it comes to access to how we buy cloud computing, how we build and secure capabilities within the cloud, and then how we deliver data and services in a fundamentally different way, depending on whatever mission area we're in.
Sounds like you're really laying the tracks down there. Going to be a very active 2022. Matt, how about at Palo Alto Networks? Top priority for you all this year?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, as we look at FY22, some of the big things that we're focused on is continuing to educate the all of our customers, commercial and federal, around not only the advantages of moving toward cloud native applications, but also the fact that you need to be keenly aware of the risks that they bring. There's always that two-edged sword, right? With opportunity also comes risk. So that's one of the big things for us, and we continue to do that through our threat research, which we publish very regularly. You can see any of that by just going to unit42.paloaltonetworks.com. You can see all that research. The second piece I would say is that there, I think, is still a low sense of awareness around specifically the complexity of cloud native supply chains. A lot of times we talk about the supply chain, we think in terms of the physical supply chain. And we've certainly talked about that for a number of years. So a big priority for us as we look at 22 is putting together that two components. So cloud native supply chain security with also zero trust on it, right? And as Paul mentioned, any complete zero trust architecture has to take in not only identity, the asset itself, but also the data. So that is absolutely a key component. So as I mentioned in previous years, it's not that the concept of zero trust is new, right? It's been around for many years, but actually putting that into practice, this is where we're seeing organizations, federal specifically, really looking how they can bring those two together. So those are some, I think, some big focuses for us as we move into 22, both the educational component as well as helping our customers to implement zero trust around the cloud native supply chain.
No doubt 2022 going to be the year of zero trust, if you will. The executive order, I think, highlighted it, I think mentioned it 11 times. So going to be a very active year in regards to that. All right, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network.
DISA and DHS recently released best practice guides on hot topics such as zero trust, cloud security, and container hardening to help protect federal agencies from supply chain cyber attacks. Join us as Palo Alto Networks Chief Security Officer of Cloud, Matt Chiodi, talks to federal leaders about exciting new best practices for implementing zero trust principles in the cloud.
For many government agencies, the question isn't whether to move to the cloud. It's about which services can deploy more efficiently and securely via the cloud to provide the agency with additional capabilities to better serve citizens and employees, often with less internal cost and resources. At ServiceNow, we pledge to improve efficiency and engagement with a single cloud platform. ServiceNow, we make the world of work work better for people.
Snowflake is the FedRAMP-approved data cloud. Federal agencies require agility and the ability to securely share data within and among organizations and across multiple clouds. With Snowflake, agencies can focus on putting data to use with unlimited scale and speed on the centralized data platform that satisfies the strictest compliance and security requirements. Start your journey toward data-driven decision-making at snowflake.com/government. That's snowflake.com/government.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network. We're talking about cloud computing at Department of Defense and Department of Homeland Security. There's two huge agencies. And we're actually talking about priorities. I'm going to throw it over to you, Richard. I'm sure you've got plenty of those. What are the top priorities for you this year?
You know, in particular, as it intersects with cloud computing and the technology, some of our priorities are really around better sharing and partnering, and in particular, sharing without making yet another copy of the data, right? When we, you know, when we talk about what's going on at the Southwest border and the need for sharing information from Border Patrol to enforcement and removals, CIS and Department of State, and even the military, we're finding that, you know, the old ways of doing things aren't cutting it anymore. And we're taking advantage of what we can do in the cloud and with some of these software as a service offerings in order to really expedite that processing. You know, we're also interested, the technologist in me is very interested in things like containerization and serverless, because that will continue to provide bring excellence in our implementations. And as a number of others mentioned, zero trust because of the prevalence that it's taken on. You know, I really want to think of zero trust as a mindset change and a journey, and not just a destination or things to check off a to-do list. It really needs, like the cloud, it needs to change how we think about doing things and make certain that it's all baked in as we go, and not just, you know, meeting some metric or checklist that gets put down in front of us.
Aaron, how about at ServiceNow? Top priorities for you over there?
Yeah, thanks, Luke. And Rich, I agree with you. Zero trust being, you know, kind of the buzzword of 2022 and critical to everything as a common denominator. But to shift from that a little bit, just for some other focus areas for ServiceNow, Rich, you mentioned supporting the mission. And what's interesting, you made the comment of where's my data? And that's a great question, because it's a question not only are the government employees and our constituents asking, but also our adversaries. And so knowing that information is a currency and that it's something that's of value, and getting it into the hands of the right people and protecting it from the hands of the wrong people is going to be critical as we go forward this year. The second is, if COVID taught us anything, that things can change on a global scale unexpectedly, very quickly. So low code, no code type of developments, Paul, you mentioned, you know, your software factories as well. Those are going to be critical successes, not just for this year, but obviously going forward. That really is the future. And then we mentioned the maximization of value for cloud. You know, we're doing a great job, but we're using 21st technology like Zoom and ServiceNow platforms, but you can do an interview on Zoom and then go back and still do a manual paper process to hire the person after the interview. And so there's still a lot of evolution that needs to happen, but we're getting close, and it's happening at a very rapid pace. And it's going to be very exciting to bring the service, the people, the data all into one place.
John, how about at DISA? Top priorities for you this year and next?
So we have a couple of really big priorities. I already talked a little bit about the OCONUS push towards, you know, pushing towards the tactical, pushing cloud connectivity and edge compute towards the tactical edge for the warfighter. One of our big focuses is JADC2, which is the ultimately combining all of the command and control systems within the department together. We view cloud as a key enabler to making that happen. Not necessarily that it's a cloud capability, but we view cloud as a key enabler for making that capability happen. So down that road, we're doing a couple of things. We have what's called JWCC, the Joint Warfighter Cloud Contract, which is out being developed right now. And the idea there is it's going to be that bulk buying contract where mission partners can leverage to get their cloud computing needs without having to do individual contracts for every service agency at COCOM. The other thing we're working on is, and I hate to piggyback on the zero trust effort, but that seems to be worn out as we get going, but we have a project underway called Thunderdome, which is basically a proof of concept of how we can do zero trust in the department and still meet all of our security requirements. So piggybacking a little bit about what Matthew and Paul were talking about there, Thunderdome is actually an effort for us to put those practices into play. Containers, right? So we've talked a little bit about containers and Kubernetes, how that fits into the overall cloud picture from an individual services and agency's perspective. We're actually doing a containers as a service capability that we're launching this year based around Kubernetes, where you'll be able to build containers and move them from on-prem to off-prem to commercial cloud to back on-prem to meet your mission needs. And we view, you know, containers as kind of that key enabler for making that transition happen in that hybrid model that I talked about early on.
John, if I may, I'm going to ask you to just give a layman's definition of containers. People hear containers and they're wondering, are these containers that are in the ocean that are, you know, I'm waiting for my my pressure washer to show up? What's a container?
Yeah. So when we talk about containers, I hate to say a product name, but we're typically talking about Docker containers in the Kubernetes environment, where you're abstracting the security and the capabilities away from the operating system that's running in the cloud and to a container, which is a standardized box, for lack of better, a logical box that runs in the environment that you can run a series of services in. So what most organizations are doing is they're leveraging containers for very specialized services. So you have web server containers and you have database containers, and you get to kind of plug and play those containers together to create your applications in a kind of streamlined fashion. So,
all right, Stephen, top priority at Snowflake.
Yeah. So one of the things Paul hit on is really top of mind is data sovereignty, and that's something that's going to affect every, not just federal, commercial, every, because you're seeing a lot of, you know, laws around the globe, you know, affecting data sovereignty, which is a little bit of an anti-pattern to cloud in a lot of ways, right? But you're going to have to deal with that. And so there's also data sovereignty within agencies, within governments, right? You're not necessarily sharing. And so, you know, that's going back to the data sharing theme, you know, some of the things working on, like operationalizing some things like called data clean room, right? Being able to allow other, you know, entities within your own organization to do analytics against your data, right? You still own your data. You're not moving your data. In an anonymized way to give them results without actually having to share that data out, right? So there's some really interesting things going on around that when it gets into, you know, the classifications of data and how to do some of these different things, levels of anonymization of data. But the key is to democratize. It's about democratizing data in a secure way, right? And so a lot of the stuff that we're doing with kind of the concept of data clean rooms and operationalizing that to allow that data democratization while, you know, maintaining that security boundary is really interesting. And I think there's a lot of opportunities there to work with the government in some of those respects. I'd say the second thing is, you know, enablement of, you know, everybody wants to talk about AI, machine learning and stuff, but really that's about the data, right? And really operationalizing the way that data products are built so that your, you know, machine learning engineers and logistics, for example, or some other domain doesn't have, you know, is able to, you know, really add value back to the organization, not having to do all of the 80% work we talk about, you know, sure, in the data wrangling space and all of that. And so being able to operationalize building those data products for those communities of interest is something that's a pretty big focus as well. We've got a lot of, you know, features that are, you know, currently coming or coming out that are really designed to really enable those communities so that they don't have to do a lot of that work, right? They're able to focus on what's, you know, how to return value back to the organization versus its non-value added activities.
Thank you very much for that. All right, we're gonna wrap it up with this last question that we love to end with. I'm gonna start with you, Aaron, and we're gonna talk about the future. You know, let's fast forward 2 or 3 years. What's it look like out there? You know, what's the demand signal that's coming into ServiceNow? What can we expect to see?
Thanks, Luke. Yeah, it's the future is bright. So we talked a lot about supporting the mission, IT moving over to OT and the data being part of the value that's going to be delivering a faster, better, more efficient service, whether it's the military's mission or protecting our homeland with DHS. Everything becoming a service really means understanding the people and the non-people assets and how they impact the service, and how do we do that in a better manner with more efficient workflow, automation, artificial intelligence that's been mentioned today. As our, you know, CEO Bill McDermott says, it's all about the people, right? So we got to take care of the people, the experience that they're having, the competition that government has with hiring employees from commercial, the experience that we provide is going to be critical as we are seeing a shift in generations and a new group coming on that are used to mobile, used to automation. And we talked about zero trust being baked into everything. And then really it's about the mission. right? How are we better enabling our federal agencies to go out there and provide a better service, albeit whatever their focus is? So in the next couple of years with cloud computing, you're going to see it done on a global scale. It's going to be done at a rapid speed because of low code, no code type of capabilities. And it's going to be a pretty exciting time.
Looking forward to that. Thank you, Stephen. How about at Snowflake? What's it going to look like? What's that environment going to look like? What's the capability going to be in the next 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I think the biggest trend, kind of building on the operational space, apologize for that, is seeing a lot of that getting more embedded into the business, into the organization. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, with a lot of these, I mentioned SaaS earlier on in the program, you know, a lot of these, you don't have that traditional IT function. And so like with, you know, use the example of the product like Snowflake, it's really a no ops product, right? You don't have to be a database administrator necessarily to use it, right? That's the kind of the point of it. And so you're going to push a lot of, the operational components of data, for example, closer to the mission, right? We're talking about Tactical Edge and things like that. We're doing, where people are actually supporting the organization, in technology in a lot of ways is just the enabler of that, right? And so, with a lot of the tech, like in the direction we're going, it's really in that no ops model where, you know, you just, there's not a lot of maintenance overhead, right? And so it's pushing it closer to, you know, it's like logistics in the Army, for example, or, you know, an HR function or a mission function or something like that. And so you're going to see decentralization of some of that, right? And which actually leads back in kind of the data sharing discussion, where now that you're decentralizing some of that, I still need to be able to get at that data where I don't have to move it, but I want to democratize it in a secure way. But I think you're starting to see a convergence of a lot of the technology within the organization and kind of starting to dissipate from, let's say, like a central IT, for example.
Matt, what's it look like? How do you stitch all that together and make sure it's secure?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the future for government services is that they are going to look more like what our major SaaS platforms today look like, ServiceNow's, Prisma Cloud's, the Office 365's. And I think the reason that, you know, those SaaS platforms have been so successful is that, you know, they've efficiently met the need of the user and they allow them to do it in a way that's secure. So if you look at what the large SaaS providers today give you, that's really going to be a picture of what we see the movement to cloud to look like specifically for government services. And I think, as Paul mentioned, you know, this entire process, it's not really just about deploying cool tech, but it's actually modernizing the organizational practices and structures. That's why when I hear about what is being done in DISA with combining different functions, that is really what this whole move is about. It's not just, you know, Kubernetes and Docker and all these fun pieces of tech. Certainly they are enablers. But I think it's actually the organizational change component. And I think as you go down that route, we have to remember that, you know, there will be an increased reliance on third-party supply chains. That's just a natural part of this kind of ecosystem. And one you know, interesting anecdote I'll bring up is, you know, our threat researchers, they did a hands-on red team exercise about 2-3 months ago on behalf of a large SaaS provider. And it only took them 3 days to discover a critical software development flaw that could have exposed the customer to an attack very similar to that of SolarWinds and Kaseya. So I think, you know, we've got to keep those types of risks in mind as well as we go through this. But certainly there are opportunities to utilize cloud native architectures, but at the same time, keeping those risks in mind, make sure that you have the visibility around that entire cloud native supply chain.
Richard, how about at Immigration and Customs Enforcement? If I'm a freshly minted agent or officer coming out of the academy, are you going to hand me a firearm, a badge, and a PDA and say, go off and do important things? How's it going to work in 2 or 3 years?
Absolutely. We're going to do that. Mobility is a big part of what we're doing now and looking at it in the future. You know, consistent with a number of the other comments here, whether it is no ops or optimization of services and containerization, you know, the technology is going to continue to advance. And whether we go to containerization or even serverless, we find we can cut out even more of the supporting infrastructure. You know, one of the things that I think will be interesting is, as was also mentioned, I think we need to bring along the additional supporting services, be it acquisitions or security or scaling, so that we can get the entire government organized into procuring all of these services by the drink. You know, we're even talking about, well, a lot of our data scientists today have to spend an enormous amount of time setting up their laptop in order to do the work that they want to do. We want them to go to a website and just have it all there contained within the cloud so that we can further reduce any likelihood of breaches. So, you know, the optimization and catching up all of these pieces up across the enterprise, I think, is where we're going to go and how we'll ultimately deliver faster to our customers or the government services.
John, how about Adisa? You have a daunting task over there. Paint a picture. What's it going to look like? What's the vision, the intent over the next 2 to 3 years?
So a lot of what I talked about today has been really the closest wolf to the sled, which has been focusing on how do we fix infrastructure as a service capabilities in the cloud, right? And when we talk about IaaS, we're talking about things like containers and we're talking about zero trust and all those kind of functionality that we've talked about. And that, like I said, that's the nearest wolf in the sled and that's what we're really focused on. But when you talk about the future, right? What we really see is to piggyback on what the other guys were talking about, is SaaS, software as a service, is really where we see the department going from an overall cloud perspective. And things like our DOS capability, the Defense Enterprise Office Suite, putting out Office 365 to the entire Department of Defense, that's just like the first step, right? And as we piggyback on that and continue to roll out more and more capabilities, once again, based on things like ServiceNow and other software as a service providers, that's where we see the department going, right? I mean, 10 years ago, the department leaders would have never thought about trusting commercial mission partners with their data. In today's world, we have to, right? It's not whether or not we do, it's we have to. We have to move to software as a service to survive in the climate that we're in from a budget perspective. We just can't afford to continue to do business the way that we've done it in the past. And so that's, we talk about the future, software as a service, I think, is where we're ultimately going to end up. There's still a need for things like infrastructure as a service and platform as a service for certain mission needs and niche capabilities. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to see SaaS take over a large part of the compute within a department.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of SaaS, Paul, you spoke a lot about it. If you could fast forward with this small but mighty organization of yours, what's it going to look like? What do you expect to see? What kind of capabilities can the Army expect in 3 years from your agency?
So I think it's my agency and, right? We've got a lot of partners and the only way we'll succeed is with those partners. What I see I'll drop it in three things. First, I think you're going to see the Army and really the DoD start to lean into delivering mission capabilities as a service, like across the entire spectrum. And whether we're leveraging infrastructure or platform or SaaS to do that, kind of to a degree irrelevant, but starting to deliver a capability built once that's scalable for many, that many can consume as a service, that starts to eat at some of the common things that we do across our business, our intelligence, our enterprise, and our warfighting mission areas, I think is going to be a way that you start to see ourselves start to organize, because far too often we're duplicating effort and services across every single one of those verticals. And we're wasting a lot of time, but also a lot of money and a lot of people on those things. And so rather than doing them 1,000 different ways, starting to see best practices emerge as like this way to do business, and starting to see that delivered as a service, I think is going to break down some barriers. I think that's going to force us to change the way that we organize, which is the second thing. I'm a big fan of looking at the value stream. Everyone that works at the ECMA knows that when we talk about, great excellence and meeting a customer at the front door of the beginning of their cloud journey, but they're not able to move through the process, start building in the cloud and delivering capabilities to the soldier, we haven't succeeded. And so my team understands the entire value stream for the product and service that we're delivering. And so I think you're going to see the Army and really the DoD start to change the way that we organize, because we break product life cycles across numerous organizations. When I first came on board, the roles of the ECMA were actually split across 8 different organizations, not just within the United States Army. That's just pain for a customer. And so I think we need to start to eliminate that pain and change the way that we organize ourselves. And I think it'll help us visualize that value stream. And then finally, the third, I think you're going to see leaders start to understand the line between people and technology and how they can leverage technology as a force multiplier for the way that we fight. Far too often in the DoD, we solve problems with hundreds of people that technology has already solved. We need to stop doing that. Great example across the Army, but someone turned to me and said, Paul, I had my senior leader turn to me, a software developer, to solve a problem rather than the hundred of infantrymen that they would typically turn to. Wow. That's transformational. I think you're going to see leadership that start to understand how to lead technology and lead people and see where that line is ever so changing between the two. If we just focus on some technology now, in 2 to 3 years, we're going to be irrelevant because we're still going to be depending on the way that we used to do business. We have to teach people the why of what they're trying to achieve and why they're trying to achieve it, and then understand the different ways of how they can do that with the technology that's emerging at the time. We need to teach leaders to understand that line, not just to understand a specific technology. And so I think you're going to see a fundamental change in the way that we promote leadership into the future to lead us into the digital age, and then not just thrive within it, but to be the dominant leaders within it.
Fantastic, and a great way to end our show today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to join us for this program. I'd like to thank our sponsors for supporting us on the show. I'd like to thank the good people here at Federal News Network that make the program so successful and enjoyable. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the listening audience out there that tune in every month. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Network.
Thank you for listening to the Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Network. This show was produced by Trezza Media Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsnetwork.com.